The collapses of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center on September the 11th, 2001 were horrific events that few will ever forget. The lives of almost 3,000 people, including their would-be rescuers, crushed out in front of our eyes. They were certainly the most frightening images that I have ever seen, up until May 24th, 2011, when Benjamin Netanyahu addressed a joint session of the United States Congress and received 29 standing ovations, along with many other outbursts of sycophantic applause. It was the final nail in a coffin, the construction of which began long ago, and in it all remaining vestiges of democracy were joyfully laid to rest by those sworn to protect it, as it became clear that the United States was now controlled by enemies inside its gates. Ruthless enemies who brooked no deviation from the policies they dream up, and few members of the United States House of Representatives or the Senate are prepared to commit political suicide by standing up to them. Instead, as we can see, they are all standing up to applaud them. The spokesperson for these enemies of the people was the Prime Minister of a foreign power, Israel. A strange choice at first glance, but really a clever surrogate, because the United States Congress could hardly be seen voting against the best interests of its own citizens, but it could be seen voting for the interests of Israel. Americans have been bombarded for so long with the idea that a special relationship with Israel is a good thing that it has been accepted as a dire necessity, as a bulwark between them and the specter of rampant worldwide terrorism. But there are many people, and I am one of them, who maintain that America's long-term tunnel vision support for the ambitions of Zionist apartheid Israel is the root cause of a great deal of the unrest and distrust that we see in the world today. So why would an assembly of over 500 politicians, who are, figuratively speaking, at each other's throats for a good deal of the time, all rise together 29 times to applaud the Prime Minister of a nation that has recently used white phosphorus against a caged civilian population during Operation Cast Lead, and whose military ruthlessly gunned down 9 people on the Mavi Marmara, a ship of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla bringing humanitarian aid to those beleaguered people?
There is tremendous pressure inside the political process to make sure that the voters stay aligned inside either the Democrat or Republican parties. Why? Because both of those parties have been captured by special interests. And those special interests are, quite frankly, the antithesis of the interests of the people. And there's no more special interest that has any more influence than the pro-Israel lobby.
And living proof of Cynthia McKinney's statement was starkly demonstrated by the U.S. Congress 29 times on May 24, 2011. But it gets even worse when you listen to some of the things that they were applauding.
And I do see a lot of old friends here. And I see a lot of new friends of Israel here as well. Democrats and Republicans alike.
Not exactly earth-shattering material, but watch these two guys. Were they looking for a signal, or did they trigger the stand-up?
Israel has no better friend than America, and America has no better friend than Israel.
There were a few hesitations here, perhaps the slower ones recalling Joe Biden's embarrassing peace initiative visit in March 2010, when Israel announced it was going ahead with building a further 1,600 illegal structures on Palestinian land.
And announcements coming out of a ministry yesterday, as they did, just further undermine the trust.
But this undermining of trust is nothing new. It's been going on since at least 1967 in this grossly unbalanced special relationship. In the January 16, 2004 edition of Stars and Stripes, the late Admiral Thomas Mora, former commander of the U.S. 7th Fleet, wrote the following. On June 8, 1967, Israel attacked our proud naval ship, the USS Liberty, killing 34 American servicemen and wounding 172. Those men were then betrayed and left to die by our own government. Israeli reconnaissance aircraft closely studied the Liberty during an 8-hour period prior to the attack, one flying within 200 feet of the ship. Weather reports confirm the day was clear with unlimited visibility. The Liberty was a clearly marked American ship in international waters, flying an American flag and carrying large U.S. Navy hull letters and numbers on its bow. U.S. military rescue aircraft were recalled not once, but twice, through direct intervention by the Johnson administration. Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara's cancellation of the Navy's attempt to rescue the Liberty, which I confirmed from the commanders of the aircraft carriers America and Saratoga, was the most disgraceful act I witnessed in my entire military career. To add insult to injury, Congress to this day has failed to hold formal hearings on Israel's attack on this American ship. Yet in the entire history of the United States, only 4 foreign leaders have addressed joint sessions of Congress more than once, and 2 of those were Israeli prime ministers. How strange that the United States Congress continues to ignore the victims of Israel's duplicity, yet its leaders continue to be honored. But let's get back to Congress to see if the applause has died down.
We stand together to defend democracy. We stand together to advance peace. We stand together to fight terrorism. Congratulations, America. Congratulations, Mr. President. You got bin Laden. Good riddance.
Now we'll have to play make-believe for a moment and imagine that what we were told about Osama bin Laden being responsible for 9/11 was true, and that he didn't die of natural causes some time ago, but that it really did take almost 10 years for the mightiest military machine that the world has ever known to track him down and murder him. But Israel's Prime Minister just told Congress that
we stand together to fight terrorism. And America has no better friend than Israel.
Now, I am certainly not an advocate for state-sponsored murder, but rumor has it that Israel doesn't shirk from sending hit teams off to other countries to deal with people they don't like. So why didn't Israel's famed Mossad get Osama bin Laden in gratitude for the enormous cash and arms handouts that Israel receives from the United States? Or as President Kennedy might have put it,
ask not what your country is doing for Israel. Ask what is Israel doing for your country.
I fast-forwarded to a point in Mr. Netanyahu's speech following an interruption from the gallery, the words of which were indistinct, but which he tried to turn to his own advantage.
You know, I take it as a badge of honor, and so should you, that in our free societies you can have protests. You can't have these protests in the farcical parliaments in Tehran or in Tripoli. This is real democracy.
The protester was a Jewish woman, Ray Abalea, of the organization Move Over IPAC, and far from being allowed to protest, she was forcefully ejected from the building, suffering neck injuries in the process, and later charged with disorderly conduct. A little later, Congress was treated to this little gem.
Courageous Arab protesters are now struggling to secure these very same rights for their peoples, for their societies. We're proud in Israel that over 1 million Arab citizens of Israel have been enjoying these rights for decades.
Nabi Saleh, a village near Ramallah, May 13, 11 days before Netanyahu addressed Congress. The peaceful rally commemorated the 63rd anniversary of the Nakba, or catastrophe, when Palestinians were expelled from their homes as the State of Israel was established. So what was that you were saying, Mr. Prime Minister?
Over 1 million Arab citizens of Israel have been enjoying these rights for decades.
As long as you don't mind having an arm or a leg broken or seeing the spectacle of thugs with guns sitting upon an unarmed woman. Although there were some serious injuries, no one was killed during this particular incident. But here are some statistics to ponder. During the last 5 years, 3,200 Palestinians have been killed by the IDF. At least 1,657 were not participating in fighting at the time of their deaths. Of those killed, 580 were children. Now we come to the usual fabrications about Iran.
Iran's leaders deny the Holocaust of the Jewish people while calling for the annihilation of the Jewish state. Leaders who spew such venom should be banned from every respectable forum on the planet.
First, it does not appear that President Ahmadinejad has denied the Holocaust. What Ahmadinejad has questioned is the mythologizing, the sacralization of the Holocaust, and the Zionist regime's continued killing of Palestinians and Muslims.
Why is it that those who ask questions are persecuted? Why is everywhere such sensitivity or such prohibition on further studies on the subject? The main question is, if this happened in Europe, what is the fault of the Palestinian people?
Second, please spare us the claims that Iran's president threatened to wipe Israel off the map, as repeated by then-Senator Obama to keep AIPAC happy.
Its president denies the Holocaust and threatens to wipe Israel off the map.
Not true. Quoting the late Ayatollah Khomeini, President Ahmadinejad said, "This regime occupying Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time." This translation has been agreed on by Persian scholars for well over 5 years, but Netanyahu suggests that Congress agrees with the damning translation that suits his agenda.
You've condemned the Iranian regime for its genocidal aims.
An outrageous interpretation which got no applause, but he then went on to make a song and dance about Iran's nuclear intentions.
For the greatest danger of all could soon be upon us. A militant Islamic regime armed with nuclear weapons. A nuclear-armed Iran would ignite a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Yet the Ayatollah regime briefly suspended its nuclear weapons program only once, in 2003, when it feared the possibility of military action.
But according to a U.S. National Intelligence Estimates Advisory released in February 2011, it seems that Iran has not been pursuing a nuclear weapons program since 2003. And even the UK Guardian, not known for its pro-Iran stance, appears to agree that Iran is not in breach of international law. The supreme irony is that Iran only began seriously looking into the possibility of developing nuclear weapons because of speeches like these.
That he has existing and active military plans for the use of chemical and biological weapons.
What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence.
Those lies and mistakes cost untold numbers of Iraqi lives and wrecked the infrastructure and cultural heritage of an entire nation. But there were also warnings to Iran, which only sought to exercise exactly the same rights that Netanyahu seems to think should be exclusive to Israel.
Israel always reserves the right to defend itself.
This man, who has been asking the United States to provide weapons for a preemptive strike on Iran based on unsubstantiated rumors, also had the gall to state,
"Israel is not what is wrong about the Middle East. Israel is what is right about the Middle East."
My low regard for leaders like Benjamin Netanyahu and his unwavering supporters does not mean that I am in favor of ideologies or regimes that advocate the stoning to death of women and other barbaric practices. But I would suggest that when this regime occupying Jerusalem does vanish from the page of time, it will only have itself to blame. But more urgently, it is time for decent Americans to take their country back from those who are selling it down the river for the proverbial 30 pieces of silver, which buys them their cozy seats in Congress, but which leaves the rest of you out in the cold.